Good morning. Happy Friday. It's Sharifa Hardy, your host of the Roundtable Talk Show. I am here with some amazing guests. And one of the favorite aspects I have on the Roundtable Talk Show is when I have guests that are very diverse. I mean, it's nice and it's fun when everybody's the same, but when you have different people who can bring different points of view to a conversation, wow. I'm just blown away. So this show, I know, is going to be an amazing show. And you know what day it is. It's Friday. And I didn't tell the guests, but like I always tell you, there are two shows you don't want to be on. My Monday show and my Friday show. Monday, I had way too much sleep. Friday, I haven't had enough sleep. So only the good Lord knows what I'm going to say. But I know it's going to be an interesting show and it's going to be a lot of fun. So I'm going to ask you to do what I always ask you to do, and that is to go out and be an evangelist for the Roundtable Talk Show. There's someone who needs this information. There's someone who can learn from it, benefit from it. Maybe they need to hear someone else's journey, and it will help them in their life. But they won't have the information if you don't go ahead and share it with your friends, with your network, share it with your neighbors. People need this information, and our guests are bringing it to them. So while you're going to go ahead and introduce your friends to the Roundtable Talk Show, I'm going to go ahead and introduce my very first guest. And she is Miss Stacy Padula. Stacy is a young adult author, a native of Pembroke, Massachusetts. She has accrued years of experience working with adolescents as a private educational consultant with extensive experience in the fields of college counseling, tutoring, and standardized test preparation, as well as a mentor, life coach, and youth group leader. For roughly 8 years, she was the director of a tutoring company in the Metro West of Massachusetts, where she managed a staff of 30 tutors and developed all company curriculum. Good morning, Stacy. How are you?
Good morning. Thank you so much for having me. It's wonderful to be here.
You are so welcome. I was excited. You see, it's Friday. I haven't had enough sleep, so I'm stumbling over everything. But I wanted to speak to you because I know one of the things that's hardest right now, or the industries that's been hit, everybody's been hit, but we're concerned about the future. We're concerned about our children. Tell us about yourself and your journey to help our children.
Sure. So that was a great brief history. About 5 years ago, I left that company in the Metro West and I founded my own practice, which is a college counseling firm. And we still specialize in helping parents and their teens navigate the college application process. So everything from writing college admissions essays to filling out the applications to prepping for the SAT and the ACT, we guide families throughout everything. And there has been so much change with that. I mean, these poor kids, they can't even visit schools right now. So, you know, you're trying to educate these kids to give them an understanding of what a college is going to be like, and they might have to commit to that school without ever stepping foot on the campus, you know? So it has really been an interesting shift. There's been a huge shift in colleges requiring early decision and instead of early action. So kids have to know even before, you know, May 1st, where they think their number one or number two school is. So, you know, it's been my role to really guide these teenagers and their families through the process in a way that they feel comfortable, they feel confident, that they're educated about it. It's been a challenge, but I think it's been very, very fulfilling. That's with my education company, but I also own a couple other companies too. So I am a young adult author of three different book series. One of them is Gripped, which is young adult fiction. The other is Montgomery Lake High, which is young adult Christian fiction. And then I'm currently co-authoring a new book series right now for children with NBA coach Brett Gunning. And it was just endorsed the other day by Kevin McHale and Mike D'Antoni and Joel Osteen. So we're super excited about this book series that's going to be coming out within the next couple of months. But what's wonderful about writing for a young adult audience is that I work daily with teenagers. You know, most of my students are juniors and seniors in high school. So by working daily with them throughout the entire college process, it helps me keep my books relevant to the age group. And then I also have a team of about 20 teenage interns who work for my book series, and they read the books. They even read them before they're published. They give me feedback. They relate it to their own lives. They write articles that I publish online to help build up, you know, their resume. It's just a wonderful, wonderful collaboration. But then in 2019, I founded a publishing company called Briley and Baxter Publications with the model of giving back to animal rescues. So after I was traditionally published, my first book came out in 2010. I had to jump through hoops, you know, to get published. I had to get an agent. It was just so much red tape. So I wanted to start a publishing company that made it easier for authors to get their books out there, easier to share their message. So I modeled the contracts and everything around what would have been ideal for me as an author, and then everything that I had learned through being a traditionally published author. So it's been a really fun venture. I love having my hands in all different places and working on all of this together. I could go on forever about this, so I'm going to stop there so you can ask me what you're actually interested in, but it's so great to be here. Thank you.
Most people I get on the show for some reason can go on forever, but it gives me gold. It gives me things to pull questions from. So you are welcome. Thank you for joining us. So I hear everything you're doing, and just what you're doing makes me tired. I'm like, wow, how are you running three different companies? Like, I'm struggling just to run like one. But why, Stacey? That's what I want to know. What is your why for what you do?
So it was, very interesting. So when I was a child, I was an avid reader. And before I entered high school, I devoured books on the topic because I wanted to know what to expect socially. You know, I wanted to be prepared. And when I got to high school, I realized that those books had done me a disservice. They were not realistic at all. They didn't cover the substance abuse that was there. They didn't cover the bullying and the rumors and just how nasty people can be sometimes. And I felt really let down and I felt underprepared. And it was then that I decided kids needed realistic books to read. So if it was a kid that's going through high school and they just need something to relate to, or if it's kids before high school, they want to read it, they needed that. And that was something I couldn't find. So I actually started writing the first draft of my first book when I was in high school. And I finished the first draft of three of my books that are published. I have 9 books published now, with the 10th and the 11th on the way. But those first three, those first drafts, I was a teenager when I wrote them. And I actually found them after college and was first of all stunned by what I knew as a teen and just all that had been going on. I mean, they were fiction, but they were based on things I had witnessed. And I realized, I'm like, these could really help some kids. If I could edit them, add in some wisdom I had picked up along the way, I think these could really help some people. And then that's when I began my journey of trying to get an agent and a publisher and so forth. But what really moved me was my faith and just knowing that God had created me as a writer, that I was his hand, you know, in the body, and to use that for the betterment of other people. So my first book series, Montgomery Lake High, is young adult Christian fiction. It's a lot of redemption stories. So while it's extremely realistic of what kids face in high school, and it deals with the substance abuse and the bullying and everything, it always points them towards God and towards finding out who they are, what their gifts and talents are, so that they can be true to themselves and fulfill their destiny. And then I started my grip book series because I just saw just this huge rise in prescription drug abuse amongst teens. And it's just heartbreaking. I saw so many good people just get caught up in things that they never intended. So I wanted to write a book series that showed, how do good kids become drug addicts? How does it happen? So, Wow. Yeah. So Gripped follows that. That's a series I'm in the middle of writing right now. I'm writing Gripped 5. It's currently being considered actually for a TV show by a couple producers out in Hollywood. So really excited about that one too. I don't want to go too much into detail unless you want me to, but.
Well, we'll talk about it. Let's talk about it, but I'm just blown away. But one of the things that you mentioned was your faith is part of what took you through this journey. And when we talk about faith, we definitely want to go ahead and introduce our next guest, the Reverend Martin L. Dunn III. Reverend Martin is the author of What Could a Priest Know About Marriage? He is an ordained minister for a very large church community in Boca Raton. Prior to seminary, he spent a decade working in the real world. Those experiences included completing a bachelor's degree in accounting and later a master's degree in divinity. Good morning, Reverend Martin. How are you?
Morning. I've never been better. And One of the messages I constantly convey is how important it is to recognize the gift of every moment, how you can recognize and never limit what God has in store for you. And I'll be honest with you, I'm totally blown away by Stacy's introduction because of all the coincidences we have, because the process of joining your wonderful show is pretty random. And here is someone who has a great foundation in faith, who recognizes the need for the centrality of God in everyone's life, to recognize the need to lift up people in their unique vocations that exist in every single moment of life, their potential, their dignity, their unique contributions, and then to find out in a particular way how she addressed them all towards young adults. That's absolutely remarkable, because that was my main market for my first book, What Could a Priest Know About Marriage? I wanted young adults to realize.
I don't mean to cut you off, Reverend Martin, but could you hold up the book like by your head? Because we couldn't see any of it.
Here we go. What Could a Priest Know About Marriage? Thank you for letting that know. That is the first of amazing journey in my life, just the last year. But I really have this passion of conveying to people the gift of the moment, the potential of the moment, the potential to be in freedom and unencumbered and to make the contributions in ways that you never thought possible. I go into great detail about how to prepare yourself for that, how to live in freedom, how to engage, how to be direct and transparent. And it really is remarkable the response I've received so far, and even the journey within itself, because I was not planning to be a writer. I am a priest in a very large community. There's plenty going on. We have a school of over 500 students. The community itself is 3,000 people. There's plenty going on. I was just telling everyone how I made it back just in time for the show, because I had to give final blessings to someone in the hospital. So as the whole world knows, things shut down about a year ago, just went from 100 to zero. And I found myself with all this unstructured time. And I took advantage, as Stacy recognized, taking advantage of each moment, each opportunity. I know exactly what I need to do. I need to write. I write a lot. And the first book came together within a matter of weeks. And I attribute the whole process of it getting published as a miracle from God, because I was warned by someone else who had published, oh, it takes years. And within a matter of weeks, I not only found an outstanding publisher with Waldorf, I didn't want just any publisher. I wanted a publisher that reflected my values and who knew the audience I was trying to reach out to. So within a matter of a few months, the book went from just a concept in my mind to on the shelf. And from that came five more books that—
Oh, wow. You just bought six books in the last year?
Yes.
Wow.
Three are already— it's all God's grace, 100%. Three are already on shelves. One is scheduled to come out next month, and then two more later this year. And I just took advantage of it. You take the opportunity. You know that simple adage, life gives you lemons, you make lemonade. So I took advantage of this extra time to write and to recognize that there is tremendous opportunity to touch lives. There are so many messages out there that I have not found anywhere with regards to God's teachings in very specific ways. You hear it all the time, oh, Jesus loves you and the like, but what does that mean moment to moment? What does that mean with the various stages of life? And the first book is directed at young adults, teenagers. The other books are directed at children. But I wrote those books, and they can be found everywhere, every bookseller, all the formats. I have it all detailed on my website, fathermartinbooks.com. But they specifically address how you can take advantage of this moment to be the person you're meant to be, and to grow and to become stronger and to stake that next stepping stone into that purpose that only gets richer and more rewarding, even amidst the difficult times, even amidst the disappointments, the betrayals, the letdowns. You have that value. You have that potential, even if you don't notice it right away. And, you know, experience is the best teacher. So I incorporated my life experiences years before entering seminary and since to show people, here's some proof, but I also bombard them with scripture. I bombard them with the example of other outstanding people to show them it is possible. Don't think you're nobody. Don't think you're the same as everyone else. You are a unique, extraordinary individual with a unique, extraordinary purpose. And I also hope that these books get shared among family members and friends so people find hope in this time where hope is so badly needed.
Absolutely.
I'm so grateful to be here.
I'm grateful to have you. Like, just listening to Stacy, just listening to Martin, like, I'm emotional at this point. I'm like, I tell everybody, like you said, Reverend Martin, I do not select the dates. The guests select the dates, but somehow, some way, God just shows up and shows out. So I'm going to come back to you, but I know our next guest is going to have an interesting point of view on this conversation, Miss Kristen Carter. Kristen is a certified coach and author of How to Stand Up for Yourself and Have Difficult Conversations. She has been in private practice since 2009, working with businesses, schools, and individual clients. Her dream is a world where everyone is equally empowered, confident, kind, and respected. And she helps people feel those things in themselves. Good morning, Kristen. Are you feeling it this morning?
I am. And I'm so, what's so interesting to me is, yes, so many touch points with Martin and Stacy, where we overlap with each other, and particularly with the teenagers I'm feeling today, the young people. I'll do kind of a chronological introduction to myself. I had a career in corporate communications for a long time. And about 12 years ago was part of a week that I gave myself to spend with a life coach named Martha Beck, and felt at the end of the week more in touch with myself than I'd been in a long time. You know, in the corporate world, you kind of answer to the demands of the job and the people that you're with. And I thought, oh, I'd so much rather do this and help other people feel the same way. And so I started a shift into coaching, which started with executives because that's the field that I was in. But over time, what I thought when I was learning so much about strengths building and feeling confident and wanting to make as much of myself and what I came in with, I thought, God, I wish somebody had taught me this as a teenager. I feel like that's the time when we really start picking up these limiting beliefs about ourselves and insecurities. So I became certified as a positive psychology coach, which is very much about inner strengths and what makes us unique. And then I became a certified family and teen coach and used what I'd learned to develop programs for schools. I was living in South Africa at the time. I was there for 15 years. And I taught in schools there and ran workshops for kids from kindergarten through grade 12, all about developing this vocabulary and this interest in what makes me unique and strong, kind of to counterbalance the tendency to think about what makes me different and not good enough. And one of the things that I felt was so common with everybody in feeling not confident was that they weren't speaking up for themselves. And so I created this tool called iSpeak. It's an acronym for the steps, but it's like a process for how to speak up for yourself because so few of us have ever learned that. My parents didn't have constructive conversations with each other about difficult issues. So I didn't learn how, and I wound up doing so much research on it that I created this tool that was helpful to people. And during then quarantine, when so many of my work in schools slowed down, my son said, you should turn iSpeak into a book. So I did. Oh, I don't know if you can see it because I've got this goofy background. There we go.
There it is. Yes.
There it is. The gist of my work is that, well, there's a top regret of the dying, which was written by a hospice nurse in Australia, who over the years gave emotional support as well as physical support to the people that she worked with. And she then summarized those regrets in a book. And the top regret is, I wish I'd lived a life true to myself, not the one others expected of me. And I think to be able to do that, you do need to build your own confidence. You need to have a tool to help you speak up for yourself. And then over time, you begin to create that life that is yours and that you're proud of.
I think that's beautiful, but I want to ask a question, Kristen, because I believe, and this, I've had this conversation with so many people, that part of it is society. Like generations prior to mine, they would say children are to be seen and not heard.
Oh, yeah.
We've silenced our children, and we have deliberately, I mean, not maliciously, that's what I want to make clear, but deliberately taken away their voice. And then when the next generation came on, the older generation said, you're trying to be your children's friend. Like, you know, because I'll be 45 in March. And that's what they said to all of us in our 40s, that, you know, you're trying to be their friend. Stop trying to be their friend. Be their parent. But, my kids are 24 and 27. And I always raised them with the knowledge that you can say whatever you want to me. You just cannot say it however you want to say it. Like, you still have to be respectful, but you are a person. You have feelings, you have thoughts, and I want to hear from you. And I admit to everyone, I'm completely sexist, because I feel, especially for a female, when you take away her voice, you take away her right to say no and to voice her opinion. So what are your thoughts, Kristen?
Could totally agree with you. And not only do I think we feel that our voices were shut down, but sometimes that our feelings didn't matter. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I know in my own family, I was the oldest. My parents were very young when I was born. They had two more kids. And to be angry or upset was inconvenient. And so that's another way that we get suppressed. Then I remember in junior high school, I was telling somebody about some esoteric concept, I believe. And this girl said, "You are such a weirdo." So there are all sorts of voices that combine to keep us small and quiet. Mm-hmm. But then you end up at the end of your life, and Martin probably has so much experience with this, people who say, "Gee, I wish I'd done things differently." Another one of those top regrets of the dying was, "I wish I'd had the courage to express my feelings."
Wow. Let's, Reverend Martin, I would love to hear your thoughts on this conversation.
My first thought is, I feel, Kristen, you read my book before our time together. It's like cover to cover. I speak about how nothing is worse than regret. And in all the chapters with all the specifics, I elaborate on the importance of transparency and communication and not doing what other people think you're supposed to be doing, but doing what you believe God wants you to do. And I bore my soul in this book. I expressed my experiences, my pains, my struggles, in my hopes that people wouldn't have to go through the same pain, because I don't believe they have to recognize, no, I need to speak up. It may be exactly what the other person needs to hear. Never mind the benefit of the speaker, mm-hmm. that everything has that potential when you do it in the spirit, as you mentioned, of love, of respect, of clarity, of shared mission. Mm-hmm. It's like, mm-hmm. of course I want what's best for you. And I have had thousands of people in this office explain in their life journeys how they came to that same conclusion. I need to stop living in regret. Life is too short. And boy, did we get those reminders this year. It's mm-hmm. no rule saying, oh, you're guaranteed to live to be 100. And quite the opposite, unfortunately, seems to be the case. But all we have is now, the gift of now. And that is the potential to be the greatest moment. And absolutely. I agree. It's like, there's no benefit to come from being shy. I get the discomfort, the awkwardness, but say it anyway. Strive to be your best anyway. It may not be perfect. I address perfectionism right. and how it's a big lie, but to at least strive to say what you feel you need to, so that you become the person you're meant to become. Yes, I say, what could a priest know about marriage? And it addresses that specific relationship. But I also recognize how every relationship is meant to grow and become fortified and greater than the sum of the parts through that communication in real time. Otherwise, as you've acknowledged, you just become pressure cookers and it's
yeah, I've done that and it doesn't work.
No, and that's You're right. It's been the MO of most cultures for most of human history, well-intentioned. You keep your emotions to yourself. You keep your opinions to yourself. But again, I hope the whole world recognizes we don't know if we have tomorrow. We have to do something, make the most out of now. And thank God we have all this technology where we can do as much as possible until things get back to normal. But when things get back to normal, not if, when things get back to normal, everyone will have this newfound appreciation. Yes. And I really, truly hope and believe that things are going to take off because everyone's going to realize all the things they took for granted, all the opportunities they took for granted, and they're going to say, never again. So even the regrets can become opportunities to transfigure it into something extraordinary.
Yes, I love it. Love your smile. Stacy, you're smiling over there. What are your thoughts? Jump into this conversation.
Sure. So, you know, I was just thinking about how what they were saying about just finding out your purpose and what you're meant to do. And it just reminded me of my journey a little bit. So I originally went to college for architecture and interior design. And so even though I had started writing books when I was, I literally wrote my first story when I was 6 years old, and I knew I always wanted to write, I wanted a career where I could be writing on the side. So I pursued architecture and interior design. And after 2 years in that industry, I just was not fulfilled. And I can vividly recall one day just literally going into the bathroom in my office and praying and saying, God, I know you created me to do something, and I know this isn't it. And you have got to show me. I'll go on the mission field. I'll go back to college. I will do anything. Please show me what it is that you have for me. Because I knew if I was in his will, I would be the most productive version of myself. And I would be, you know, so fulfilled, right? And helping the most people. So I prayed. And at that time, my family was going through something. My stepdad was dying of pancreatic cancer. And he's very young. He was 42 when he was diagnosed. He passed away when he was 45. Now they gave him 6 months to live. And by God's grace, he lived to about two, you know, a little over 2 years, which was amazing. But my boss was very aware of that, you know, so I ended up praying about it, decided to take a leave of absence to help my mom take care of Glenn. And in that time, I really sought out God in prayer. And I said, please show me what it is that you want me to do. And I was so open. I knew what he had was best. And one day I was just randomly in a conversation with somebody and they said the word tutor. And it was like, this like light just went off. And I was like, tutor, how does someone become a tutor? I love working with young adults. I love math. I love English. I used to tutor in high school. That would be just the most fulfilling thing. How do I do that? So I started looking into it and I really couldn't find too much, too many, I guess, companies that might be up to hire some architect designer who just decides God told her she should become a tutor. So it was interesting. I kept praying about it. And one day I was out for dinner actually with friends from the architect firm, and no one except my boss knew I was thinking of not coming back. I had explained to her just my lack of fulfillment and so forth, and that I was going to take the time to explore other options. And so my coworkers had no idea about that. And one of them got a phone call and she's like, I'm so sorry, I have to take this call. My friend's on bed rest. When she hung up, she said, oh, that's my friend Jamie. She amazes me. She runs this really successful tutoring company, blah, 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 blah. After she said tutor, I was like, my jaw just dropped, because earlier that day I had prayed and I said, God, I have researched everything. I have exhausted every avenue I know about how to break into a tutoring business. You have got to show me who to talk to. If this is really you, show me who to talk to. And lo and behold, that night, Allie got that call from Jamie. And it just blew my mind because she was able to put me in touch with Jamie and get me an interview. And then another God story, totally, that company was in the Metro West of Massachusetts. I lived on the South Shore. So when Jamie got my resume, she was like, well, you know, she doesn't really have much teaching experience aside from, you know, teaching the younger kids at her church. So she called me, she said, well, why don't you get one or two of your own clients, make sure this is really what you want to do. And if it is, we'll bring you in for an interview. But then 48 hours later, she called me back and she said, Stacy, we have been in business for 7 years. all of our clients have been Metro West. So that's west of Boston. I'm way south down by the Cape. She says, out of nowhere, I am getting phone calls from people from the Cape, from Kingston, from Braintree, all these surrounding towns. She's like, in 7 years, that has never happened. That is a sign from God. You need to come in for an interview. So I went in, I explained the whole story, just kind of laid it all out there very honestly. And they're like, you know what? We'll give you a chance. And I will tell you, when you step into God's will, he just elevates you. Because within 6 months, Jamie called me and she said, Stacey, however it is you tutor the SAT, that's what I want the company to do. She's like, all of our 30 tutors, I want them to do it your way. Will you write a book and just explain everything? So I wrote like a 60-page book on how to tutor the SAT. She made it company-wide. A year later, she called me and said, I want to build this tutoring company into an educational group. I want to work with troubled youth. I want to do college counseling, career counseling, life coaching, everything. I want a director. I want it to be you. And suddenly I became the director of operations of this company, where I remember when I first looked at their website and I was like, oh my gosh, there's all these licensed teachers that went to Harvard and Yale. I'm like, I felt so underqualified. And within a year and a half, I was the boss of all of those people. I was writing all the curriculum, training everyone. And it just blew my mind, because when I've switched from the A&D industry into education, there were so many people who said, what are you doing? You went to college for 5 years for this. You're going to go just be a tutor? And I said, if this is where God is calling me, he has a purpose and he knows what's best. And I just, despite what everyone was saying, I followed that calling. And I remember just waking up every day and being like, I cannot believe I get paid to do this. I love this so much.
Wow. I feel like we're in church today. I don't know if you go to church, Kristen, so I don't want to apply, but I just feel like there's something going on here today that was powerful. One of the things that I always tell people, anytime I hear it just so happened, or Reverend Martin said earlier, coincidentally, it's like, that's God showing up and showing out. Reverend Martin, what are your thoughts?
Thank you. I am overwhelmed right now, because literally nothing else matters than doing God's will. Literally nothing else. It is the exact purpose of your creation. It's the exact purpose of your existence. How can we think for a moment? And I did. I'm not proud of that. But how can we think that we know better than God what's best for us? And again, I feel, Stacey, thank you. You read my book too, because I talked about that same journey where I was in accounting for many years. And ever since childhood, I felt this call to ministry, but I made excuses. I ignored it. I tried to. And at the age of 30, I realized, no, this is what God wants me to do, to go into the seminary, to give my life in this particular way, just as everyone is called to give their lives in particular ways. And when I did it, I received wholesale rejection. You're crazy. You're insane. Why? You had this going for you, that going, you had everything. You're throwing it all away. The proof that it was God's will was that although it was extremely painful to receive that rejection, although I was in seminary with people in the military and they compared it to boot camp and everything about it was so unpleasant, I knew it was God's will, because there was never a single moment where I did not have this internal, indescribable peace that I was doing exactly what I was meant to be doing. It's better than happiness. It's better than joy. And it's the presence of God within you saying, keep going, keep Absolutely. Giving. Somehow things are going to work out, and in better ways than you could ever imagine. Again, we're talking about the infinite God. That yes. How can we shortchange that? And yes. How Jesus even said in scripture, you're going to receive 100 times more than what you gave up. I feel like I got like a trillion times more than what I gave up. And you all are nodding. Thank you.
I am definitely nodding, because when I did my first book, which was From Laid Off to Loving Life, that was part of what I talk about on all my interviews. I did an interview just yesterday, and I shared, and I did this book in maybe 2009, and it was From Laid Off to Loving Life. I've been laid off 8 times, but I always talk about how being laid off was a result of an argument with God. Like, I literally had an argument with God where God was telling me, I want you to help people. And I was like, no, I want to go be an employee. I love being an employee. There's nothing that says I love you like direct deposit. Direct deposit was my thing. Like, every other Friday, I could count on it. I could pay my bills. And God was like, no, go help the people. And I was like, God, have you seen people? Like, do you know people? I don't want to do it. And then what would happen is, like, I'm going to get a job. And like at least 3 or 4 times, literally 6 months to the day I was hired, I was laid off. And God was like, help the people. And I was like, no, I'm getting a job. And after a while, I said, I hear and I obey. And all of a sudden, the doors just opened. And look, I'm a talk show host. I'm running for Senate in 2024, helping people. I'm the president of the Black Chamber of Commerce in the Long Beach area, again, helping people. So I just live my life now going, okay. And I tell people, and don't get me wrong, Mark, I might get in trouble, but I tell people, I can be a lazy believer, because I'll be like, okay, if it's meant to happen, gotta figure it out. Gotta make a way. And I'm like, okay, let me do something and make this work. But yes, I've definitely seen it in my life. But one of the important questions I wanted to ask you today, make sure I got to today, to Stacy, was about tutoring. Many parents are suffering in a global pandemic. You know, I through the grace of God, my kids are 24 and 27. I was safe. But a lot of these parents, they have absolutely, they've never been teachers. They don't know what to teach. So what are some of the, I'm pretty sure you've seen an increase in requests for tutoring.
Yeah, it has definitely been difficult adjusting to this online stuff. I am so fearful that there is just going to be a gap in kids' education, especially for the younger kids right now, because, you know, you try to sit a second grader down in front of a laptop for, you know, 4 or 5 hours. It's like, what are they really going to grasp? They don't have the pressure some of the older kids have where, okay, I know colleges are going to see my grades. I know this is important. So I really do, I feel for them. And the parents, so many of these parents are, they're trying to work full time still, you know, and then they have to be educators, which is something they feel underqualified for and like they don't have the time for, but they care. It has been so hard. So we have definitely had an increase in requests for tutors for a lot of the younger kids, even if it's just someone who can come and just oversee the kids, you know, while they're on their online classrooms and just to help them with homework and stuff and provide that academic support, because a lot of times it's the motivation. Kids need that, especially the younger kids, they need that motivation to know why it's important to learn, why they need to do their work. And I found that that's probably been the most difficult thing, you know, it's for the younger kids. And then with my older students, so I personally work mostly with juniors and seniors, it really just has been this navigating this SAT and ACT that keep canceling on kids like a week to a day before they're supposed to take the test. So I will have students who will prep for months for these exams and they'll feel so good about it and so confident. And then they get an email the night before saying, sorry, your test has been canceled. And it's so disheartening. So then they keep prepping for the next one and then that gets canceled. I had with my students personally, I would say about 80% of them ended up having to apply for this year. The kids that are seniors now, they had to apply without any test scores because every single exam they signed up for throughout 2020 was canceled. And thank God colleges went test optional for the most part. And they really did mean it because, and I tell parents this, and this does put them to ease. So out of all my students for the early action and early decision round, now I said 80% did not submit test scores. My students received 76 acceptance letters and only 3 rejections.
Oh, wow. Congratulations.
That's amazing. I was so happy for them, especially knowing how hard they worked and they had really nothing test-wise to show for it. Schools didn't hold that against them, you know, and it was really, really important. And I always say, you know, the colleges are trying to protect their averages. They're trying to protect their average GPA, their average test scores. Kids can only take this test once. their scores are not going to be what they normally are. They're not going to be the 1500, you know, that kids usually test, you know, three or four times to get. So by going optional, those colleges can protect their own rankings, their averages, by just not even looking at the scores. So if that can put any parents' minds ease out there, they really do mean it when they say optional. They're trying to protect their own interests.
Absolutely. Kristen, your thoughts?
One of the first thoughts that I was thinking was, it's often, very often, the hard parts of our lives that help us become who we're supposed to be in the world. And especially if you can use that hardship and what you learned from it to help other people, that's one of the most meaningful ways to build a life. And it's been true for me, and for all the stuff that people are going through, we'll move into a new normal. And maybe we'll be more compassionate with each other. Maybe we'll find what fires us up because of the things that we've struggled with. So I know it's very general. It isn't specific to tutoring or being in school, but
no, it was beautiful.
There can be a silver lining to the things that are hard for us.
Absolutely. I loved in your bio, out of everything, what stood out to me is the word kind, you know, creating a world that is kind. And I have seen over the last year, more people just simply be kind than I think I've seen in my lifetime. I had a guest on the show. She said she had met a lady who wrote a letter, who walked around her neighborhood saying, if you're elderly or whoever you are, if you need help or you need someone to go to the grocery store, you know, I'm here, this is my name, this is my number, call me. So the guest said that she wrote her own letter and did the same thing with her neighbors and walked around her neighborhood and introduced herself. She said that she did not get one phone call asking her for anything, but she got 3 phone calls from people who said, hey, I never knew who you were. Thank you for introducing yourself. And she built relationships that had it not been for COVID, she never would have built. So I completely agree, Kristen.
That's so nice. One of the things that I always found interesting in doing strengths training is mm-hmm. how kindness is one of the most common human strengths. There's a survey that's free for anybody. And there's a child's version where you can find out what your character strengths are. Let me give the link because it's so amazing. It's viacharacter.org. But as kind
before you go, one moment. So I don't want you to lose that thought, but I just want you to spell via character.
VIA, it stands for values in action, character.org.
Okay.
But one of the fascinating, and there are several sort of strengths of community, like kindness, forgiveness, love. But when I've often asked clients of mine who are strong in those qualities, do you use that on yourself? Mm. They often say, oh no. You know, it's like I feel like all this kindness, I hope we can turn it on ourselves too.
And what are some of the things you do to be kind for yourself?
I've learned a lot about self-compassion since I was diagnosed with cancer 3 years ago.
Oh, wow.
And yeah, so that's one of the groups that I really love to work with is people who've had the rug pulled out from underneath them and feel like, oh my gosh, where am I? Who am I? What matters to me? What do I really want to do now? And self-compassion came to me very early on when I thought, God, I'm really struggling. And a thought came to me from somewhere divine that was, of course you're struggling. This is really hard. And as somebody who's always wanted to teach and help others, I found myself being patient, being able to put myself first. I didn't have a choice, so I had to. And being patient with my treatment and allowing people to help me. Mm. I think as women, we're often doing for others, our children, our communities, our clients, our workplaces. And those are some of the things that I still do. I start my day every morning being quiet and listening and reviewing my priorities. I'm really clear on what matters to me, and I make it a point to do those things every day.
Yes, that is so powerful. That is so wonderful. Now, I've been dying to ask this question all day, but then we just started talking and we've been going on. I want to go over to Reverend Martin for a moment. What does a priest know about marriage?
You know that you cannot do it by yourself. Again, we, especially in our culture here, drive home this message of rugged individualism. And I hope that COVID has made people realize in those beautiful examples we heard, we need each other. And there's no shame in that. People, unfortunately, have been beat into them that, oh, you're supposed to feel ashamed if you can't do it on your own. And that was my journey. I had it all summarized with a friend of mine who said, oh, you don't say much about yourself. And I thought he was paying me a compliment. He was expressing a deep concern. So I incorporate those experiences to recognize the importance of trust, even when you don't have the answers. I have had to face many tragic situations with people who also had the rugs pulled out of them. And again, the most unfair, cruel, tragic ways. And sometimes the only answer you can say is, I don't know. You can't dare to say any other answer. But at the same time, to see where God is in all of this. God is, especially in the tragic, confusing, uncertain situations, to show where he is with you, where he is showing you, where do I need to go from here? Where is this next baby step that is going to require all of my strength? And again, to get away from this notion that you have to be the strong one all the time. You hear this phrase, marriage is 50-50. Marriage is really 100-100. You give everything you can give at that moment. And every couple I've ever met who's had a very happy marriage, whether it was 10 years or I just met somebody yesterday, 72 years of marriage.
Oh, wow, I want that.
Yes. And that's what I give people hope for in this book. It's like, you can have this too, if that's what God created you to do. And if it wasn't, you could still have this meaning that everyone has been gifted with, everyone has been longing for. But the whole point is, there are going to be days where you're going to be doing all the giving. There are going to be days where you're going to be doing all the receiving, and infinite number of combinations of who's giving, who's receiving, to what amount. But to just trust, okay, I'm giving, I'm loving, I'm expressing as best I can now, given all these circumstances that you cannot make up, and trusting that God will take care of the rest. And that's why the most important one to communicate with in marriage and every other relationship is God. And I'm edified by these couples that do recognize this, and they pray together. They turn to God together, and they get their strength and deeper unity from that communion.
That's beautiful. I have a question. This is probably a weird question that nobody, well, maybe somebody else has asked you, but this is what I do. I ask those questions that other people wouldn't ask. After doing this for so many years, when you are ready to, when you meet the bride and the groom, not at the wedding, but prior to that, can you look at them now and go, these two, or do you look at them and go, 72 years there?
I can't lie to you. I do see that. But even in those couples where I'm like, no, this isn't a good idea, I acknowledge, and I use my own life as an example. I've made terrible mistakes. I think if everyone's honest with
them. We need a mistake, Reverend Martin. You keep alluding to this past life that you live. We need something to go with.
Well, again, it's like my past life was living for what I thought other people wanted from me. Mm-hmm. It's like, oh, I thought people would want me to get this prestigious job and have this nice home and so on and so forth. That's a lie. That's a lie. And it's sooner or later, it catches up with everyone, whether you're living for the right purpose or not. So I meet with these couples preparing for marriage. And again, I don't throw a bucket of cold water on their excitement and their love and their enthusiasm. However, I try to at least open their eyes to the potential to become better starting now. You've heard this before, I'm sure. It's like, oh, they'll get better after we get married, or I'll work on this after I get married. No, you start now. You address this now in the preparation. And worst case scenario, this hasn't happened yet with me particularly. I know of it happening to others. Worst case scenario, and this is the whole point of engagement, I bring up something that needs to be addressed. And in the process of the couple striving to address this, they realize, oh, this is not a good idea right now. And sometimes they'll address it and they'll be better and stronger and they will be ready for marriage. And there's no shame in acknowledging, no, we're not meant to get married right now. And I had that personal experience as well. It's like, no, I'm not, this is nothing against the other. And it's nothing against me in this regard. We're just not meant to get married. And I'm proof of this, that if you're not meant to get married to that particular individual or get married at all, God has something better for you because you've taken that leap of faith. You're not saying, oh, people are going to look at me with shame because I'm not married yet. And again, I struggled with that in my journey. But again, it doesn't matter. The only opinion that matters is God's. Yes. And when you do that, you find that peace and enthusiasm and strength.
Yeah,
strength. It's like, and you have that desire to get others to open their eyes and realize the exact same thing. You're going to find the greatest amount of happiness when you simply have that perspective. And if you're called to marriage, you're going to love the other the best way when you have that perspective. And you're going to live to your greatest potential, allow them to get to their greatest potential. And you're constantly, for the entirety of your life, including the 72-year couple, you're constantly growing more in love with each other. Again, I was at the deathbed of the husband, and they were still, and I've known them for many, many years, they're still and have only been deeply in love with each other. And even amidst the frustrations, the pains, the disappointments, the letdowns, the exhaustion, they still grew closer and closer and closer together over 72 years. And that is a particular calling for everyone who is called to be married, but you're not meant to marry the wrong person. And it's not a cause of shame if you are not meant to be married at all, because God has something extra special for you regardless. When everyone lives their vocation, everyone has that equality because you're living to your greatest potential. You're going to have the greatest amount of happiness as that person married 72 years, even if you weren't married to be married. It's all about living that purpose that God created you for. And we all can experience that highest peak possible, even with all the difficulties and pains and disappointments.
Absolutely. I love it. Now we are coming down to the last few minutes of the show. And what I love to do at the end of every show is just simply allow my guests the opportunity to speak directly to the audience, to everyone who is watching the show live, as well as everyone who is watching it in the archives, and let them know what you want them to take away from your appearance here today. And we're going to start with you, Stacey.
Great. Thank you so much. So just to give you some information on my book series, my first book series, Montgomery Lake High, is the young adult Christian fiction that does prepare kids for the social battles of high school, but it does share the importance of faith and developing a relationship with God. It is filled with redemption stories of kids who have turned away from bad lifestyles with drugs, any other types of social issues and abuse, and helped them find a better path by developing a relationship with God. So that is Montgomery Lake High. My Gripped book series basically follows a college football player. He's an NFL top prospect and acclaimed quarterback. He has two grueling surgeries after a horrible knee injury and ultimately ends up addicted to his pain meds. It's kind of a long story. I don't have time to get into it, but I would love for you to check out Grip. That's the one that's being considered now for a TV show. It really helps. Well, it entertains. It also educates teens and parents about how easily it is for very good people to fall into the grip of addiction, but it also gives hope for recovery. And it shows the importance of surrounding yourself with positive influences, as well as the importance of faith and confidence in yourself, and just believing that when doors shut, there's a reason. And that reason is that God has something better for you. And then my third series is going to be coming out soon. That's the one I'm co-authoring with NBA coach Brett Gunning. And that's called On the Right Path. It's a children's book series, and it's meant to help instill character qualities into kids ages 3 to 8. So my website is stacyapadula.com or teenreads.org. And if you're an author and you would like to submit a book for us to consider publishing, that website is brileybaxterbooks.com.
Yes, I love it. You got a lot going on. Definitely have to come back on the show and keep us updated. Reverend Martin, what would you like our viewers and our audience to take away from your appearance here today?
Well, thank you all for this great opportunity to become friends. And I want to end with this most frequent quote in the Bible, 365 times, not a coincidence. We're told, be not afraid. And we need to hear that message and let it sink into our hearts more than ever before. And all of my books, whether for teens or young adults or for children, I strive to show exactly, precisely how we can always be unafraid because we have God with us. All of my books are outlined in great detail on fathermartinbooks.com. The books are available in hardcover, paperback, audio, ebook. And again, the first book, What Could a Priest Know About Marriage, is addressed for the teen young adult audience. And quite frankly, I have many who are in their 80s and so on who are getting meaning out of the book. And I'm very honored about that. The other books are children's books. I wrote them for the 7 to 11 age market. And I bring up various topics about our faith that quite frankly, I did not find when doing Google searches. There's so many things about virtues and good living and the presence of God. I could not find anything whatsoever addressed to children. And again, two were out already. God is always, marriage is God's special gift, and it's worth it because of God's love for you. They're already out right now. And I intentionally wrote these books with the parents in mind. I'm hoping that together, the children and parents read these books so that the parents realize things that they probably were never told. Let's be honest, we're now in a third generation where it's not considered part of life to be engaged with a faith community. It's something around 15% of the population, regardless of faith. So again, I'm hoping to open up eyes for people to realize this potential of your potential, knowing how much you are loved and how God gives us more than we could ever imagine, so we can make these contributions in this most unique way, regardless of what may be going on in the world. And again, thank you for your time today.
You are welcome. Thank you for your time. I have totally, completely enjoyed it. This has been a very emotional show, and we are going to end it with the lovely Christine. What do you want our viewers and our audience to take away from your appearance here today?
Thanks, Sharifa. I think the most important message that I would like to just give everybody is that you matter, your thoughts matter, your feelings matter, and your contributions matter. And if you struggle with any of that stuff, my book can help you. And you can find out more about it. And I give lots and lots of stuff away on my blog, which is at kcarter.com. But also, if you're a leader, if you're somebody who's running a business, you said that entrepreneurs and business people are the primary audience for your show. If you want to have an open, confident team at your work or in your department, encourage those people to learn how to speak up for themselves. Show them openness, be fair, be kind. And I think that parents can do the same things with their children. And in doing so, you'll help be creating kind, confident people who will go out and change the world just by being themselves.
Yes, thank you, Kristen. That is so powerful. I definitely agree. I love watching my kids now. I talk about the time when my son was 21 and we always have these long drawn out discussions. But at the end of this particular conversation, he says, "Thanks for talking to me, Mom." And I said, "No, son, thank you for talking to me. You know, at 21, how many young men want to sit and talk all day with their mother that, you know, so mm-hmm. I was just so happy that my kids are wonderful and they're happy and everyone, this has been an amazing show. I completely enjoyed it. I want to thank you all for being guests on today's episode of the Roundtable Talk Show. And I especially want to thank everyone who tuned in to watch the show live. There's so many comments this morning. People are enjoying the show. All the guests, please check out the comments on the Roundtable Talk Show Facebook page. I'm pretty sure you will enjoy them. But to all our audience, as I say always, please don't just watch the show. Please don't just share the show. I greatly appreciate it. But what I appreciate the most is you supporting our guests. Our guests were here today for you this morning to share their stories, their journey, their information. So please support them. Their website link is in the Facebook post. But again, don't just go to their website. Pick up at least a couple of copies of their books, and not just for you, for the kids in the neighborhood, for someone who needs this information. Go ahead and get it from our guests. Reach out to them. And when you do, please let them know Sharifa Hardy says hi. Now, if you're interested in more ways that I can help your business, or maybe you want to be a guest on the Roundtable Talk Show, please visit my website at asksharifa.com. Until Monday morning, everyone have a safe and a blessed weekend. Bye now.